so just kind of explaining what's going on. So it's quite visual and just quite interesting. So if you'd feel free to just look at it, and you can exit forever wherever you want.
Okay, brilliant.
Thank you. So we are here at British Science Festival, and we are going to take a few interviews, and we are working with the Smart City Project. And behalf of this project, we all are here to invent more about the smart city. And let's go inside and let's see what's there.
So the idea is to immerse ourselves in there and then perhaps come out and talk to people that's around.
Are you doing with the Lisa Smart City Project?
I am, yes.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So here, you can see here.
So as I enter through a dark
and then use ultrasound to measure the
body's
reaction to that, basically. And as a result of that, we show them
what the breath. So it's dark, it's got lights, it's very, very sciencey. It's all about quantum physics, and it's about, Professor Robert Young, and all the people who are involved with the different particulars of science. Oh wow, so Dr. Ryan Pink from Oxford Brookes University was responsible for molecular biology and genomics.
Hi, I'm Skye. I'm a recent graduate from DMU in Arts and Festivals Management, and then I'm doing my Master's in Cultural Events Management.
Oh
so,
wow, okay, yeah. So we'll come to that. Thank you so much. And what's your name?
I'm Sean. I'm entering my third year at DMU studying English with creative writing.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, obviously, you guys are here at the Science Festival. Just tell me a little bit about your experience and also any kind of reflections you'd like to share. Whoever would like to go first?
Well, the Science Festival is a bit breathtaking, to be honest, because I don't really have a particular interest in science. I came because it had the word festival on it, and I wanted to build my festival experience. However, working on Compass and being inside and looking at like all the animations on the ground, accompanied with the researchers discussing what they found. I found it really interesting, especially a part on like DNA, and there was a bit as well about beluga whales, which I found really, really cool.
Okay, awesome.
So yeah, it's opened my eyes to science a bit here.
That's amazing. And I think being part of the culture with what you're studying, are you just saying you're in your first year or your second year?
I haven't started my master's yet. I start in October.
Oh wow, okay. Yeah, so. Amazing. Well, good luck with that. But no, thank you for that. And what about yourself?
I have like no relationship to science. I hated science at school. Like, I failed physics at GCSE.
So did I, don't worry.
Yeah. But like being here kind of, because it's more artsy, it's something that I can engage with more. And I'm like, oh yeah, I actually understand this and I am actually interested in it.
Okay.
It's just it's not been communicated in a way to me like this before, you know?
Exactly. And I think, like, I remember when I was at school, I never remember science being delivered and shared in this way. So, like you say, when we're creative, like, I'm a writer as well, so I resonate with you with where you're coming from. It's really important that things are, and I think now we can choose the way we want to get, you know, information, and I think that's what is really awesome. So I just want to ask you, so, you know, being a creative and the understanding around, so you know when we are attending things like this or festivals and things, like what do you think goes into in terms of like, you know, because around AI and data literacy, what's your understanding around that? Where are you in terms of how important is data and when we register for events and like what happens when we, you know, when we send that information on, you know, what are your thoughts around that?
I'm really, really hesitant and not a fan of anything like AI or data being shared, because like it can be abused so easily.
Absolutely.
And I think particularly coming from like a Jewish background, I'm very aware of how that could then be used to persecute me and other communities.
Okay.
So yeah, but I don't understand the ins and outs of AI, but like I think it can be used for a lot of good, like in medical research, but I think there's maybe a bit too much focus on getting all the data like companies can and stuff.
So it's about the people who get the data, is the insecurity in what you're talking about, because I understand where you're coming from, because we are of different ethnicities, so we kind of see it from that perspective. What about, here's a question for you then. So what do you think needs to happen when we are sending off all this data, filling forms and all of that? What do you think you would like to see as a person of Leicester and the people who make those policy changes? What do you think you need to see to trust where that information is going?
So there have been discussions of things like data taxes. So after a while, a company will be taxed for the data that they hold. And like just policies that show that it's not leaning towards the company's profits and the company's interests, but remains firmly with like the people who are the most vulnerable in society.
Awesome. I love that, because that's the whole reason what we're doing our interviews and our research about is getting rid of this apathy and this mistrust. So it's really poignant of what you say, because you're in the sector, you're studying, you're here in the city of Leicester, and you've really highlighted some major important things. So thank you so much for your time.
Okay.
Have a great day. Thank you so much. So here's another board that says declination, what affects True North? And the other one says, when have things gone off course or altered their path, the compass swings again and we explore the critical importance of observation, of seeing deviations and differences from hypotheses, of being surprised. The nuances of the natural world, from Sarah Goodacre's flying spiders to Ashley Griffin's collaborations or make hats that don't help that individual. Systems that are connected in far greater complexity than imagined. Within Donna McGregor's Carcadian Rhythms in Grass and Joe Sadler's Seeing Microbes Make Foreign DNA Proteins. Throughout research, the prediction of the result was tested, and researchers care deeply about what they discover. Nolia Dominguez, falcon stem cells are like a pet. Penny trainers. DJing becomes a powerful physiological, psychological tool, as James and Dean muses on the importance of sound. Ancestral DNA is like a woven piece of fabric with threads from different ancestors.
Hi, I'm Liz. I'm a Leicester Uni archaeology student.
Oh, awesome. Meeting some amazing, interesting people today.
I'm Katie. I'm also a Leicester Uni archaeology student.
Awesome. Great. Thank you. Right. Do you want to ask the questions? And I'll...
So we've been talking a lot about, we're doing a project about what smart city is. And we kind of wanted to know the public's, opinion on what smart city is. As we believe, do we believe Leicester's becoming a smart city? Are we on that way, or are we already in a smart city? And what features are there for smart cities? So can we identify anything in Leicester that could potentially be, smart technology, whatever it could be? Because we all have smartphones, don't we? So that's the kind of thing. So what would you define as a smart city being?
To be honest, I've never heard of a smart city before. I don't know. I suppose using things like Google Maps and QR codes, that's what comes to mind. I don't know Leicester that well because I'm a distance learner, so this is the first time I've ever been. I've never heard of it before. So.
Okay, so then that asks the question. So how do you normally travel into uni, or when you're travelling, what mode of transport do you use?
So because we're distance learners, I study at home on the settee. I'm just studying with my laptop. I work full-time and study part-time around work, so
okay, cool.
I drive to work, but I just study at home. So I've been driving into the uni because my apartment's a bit too far to walk every day.
Okay, so then let me ask you then, so in terms of getting here or your day-to-day, how do you think things could be improved in terms of your experience, whether it's travelling into uni or travelling into the city as a general, in terms of what you think could be better is the question I think I want to ask.
It's quite a busy city. I don't really know what buses to get, so I don't know, maybe something like a university shuttle bus that went a bit further out and picked people up would be good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you so much. Okay, well, what about yourself?
What about
Yeah, so how's your experience been, and what do you think is a smart city?
So again, the smart city is completely a new thing to me. I guess it would be like having digital maps, or like an app so you can get around the city easier. I didn't know much about sort of public transport for coming here, because I drive in, so I've kind of been walking to and from uni. But I guess having sort of like an app where it's got all the bus routes and stuff listed on it.
Holdouts, maybe emergency things that you need just in case, that kind of app, do you think would be helpful? So you know where the traffic holdups are, you know where the local emergency things are, or you know where you need to go for like your everyday thing just in case of worst case scenario, something like that.
Yeah, so I've been doing sort of quite a bit of driving around, and the main thing I've noticed is that the ring road is a bit of a nightmare. Mm. I mean, granted, I was driving around it probably at rush hour. But
So do you use Google Maps to get to places as well?
Yeah, so I either use Google Maps or Apple Maps, just for sort of getting around. Like, that's the first thing I kind of do when I get to a place is like look on the map at where it's close, like find the nearest supermarkets and stuff. Yeah. So yeah, I use sort of the Maps apps on my phone quite a lot.
So you are already using smart gadgets or smart tools. Essentially, but yeah, I think this is I think the term smart came from smartphones. I mean, we always had smartphones, smart TVs, and now it's all about smart cities, which is like the infrastructure as well, well as the gadgets, and it's created so people, you know, everyday people like us have it easier. In terms of when we're travelling in, and I know in Leicester they've introduced, you know, if I don't know if you go around on the first buses, like for example that one behind us, they've got a like a digital time where you can actually see when the next bus is coming as well. And then if you press, there's like a little button, and when you press it, it tells you, so if you're visually impaired, it tells you what street you're in, on, and also it tells you how long to the buses as well. So I find that was quite intriguing, and it's something new that they're doing across Leicester as well. I'm not sure if it's outside Leicester, but I've noticed it within the city.
It's the first I've heard of it, so I don't know.
Go and give it a try.
It's literally there. It's so tempting. I do it every time I'm on.
It's just a button. I imagine they get kids pressing it quite
a lot. Well, the big kid comes out of me when I'm not actually there. So
no,
I
we're just making sure it works.
Hi, we are working with the Smart Leicester City project. Would you mind, like our regular life, that how you're using your different device and how Smart City is helping you?
Do you like, say for example, with like technological advancements, with phones and everything you can do at home, like you can book doctor's appointments, everything at home from like touch of a finger. Do you find that good? Like, are you
happy with
that?
Is it easy and beneficial to your regular life?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's not the face-to-face things, which are maybe sometimes important, depending on what it is.
Yeah.
But for lots of practical reasons, just booking an appointment or you know, that sort of thing, it is very straightforward.
Do you think it's accessible for people like of all ages and all like ethnic groups?
I mean, we're probably very much sort of target audience for most things. We're IT savvy, I would say. English is our first language. We don't have any mobility or any disability issues.
Yeah.
So I think we're probably finding it easier than maybe people that aren't in our position. I mean, I can't say whether the software's available in appropriate languages or whether the accessibility side of things is fine. But from sort of able-bodied person's point of view, it's very straightforward for me.
What I was going to ask you is, how did you travel in today?
I live in the city centre, so on foot.
Oh, lovely. And how did you find it? Did you see anything unusual around you? Or
I haven't noticed anything unusual here today, but I did walk through. I went to London last Friday, and as I walked up Granby Street to the station, I noticed that there were two photographs of the Queen on the electronic sort of billboards on the bus stops, and I noticed that all the electronic billboards were showing across the city centre were showing the same two pictures. And when I got to London, all the electronic talking points were also showing the same two pictures. And I thought, oh my goodness, that means that if somebody makes the decision to show us the same images or give us the same messages, how easy it is to make that happen all over the country at the same time. I thought that was quite an interesting thing to notice.
That is very interesting. And that brings us back to data collection as well. because we quite often do shopping online, or when we get apps on our phones, it's always collecting data about what we do, how we do things, what apps we use. Even shopping wise, I mean, we've got these club cards, which essentially what it does is stores our information on what we, our data, and even recommends to us, okay, you did buy this last week, why are you not buying it this week?
Yeah. Oh yes.
So we are being monitored all and the time. So how does that make you feel?
Well, I think I've been aware, so I too have been watching the capture on the television, mm-hmm. But I've been aware since the Cambridge Analytica scandal, yeah, that everything we do online is data that is useful and being purchased by somebody, mm-hmm, to predict our behaviour, and the algorithms are able to sort of track types of behaviour. So I think I've been conscious of that for quite a number of years now, and I've listened to lectures about it. And the subversive thing to do, of course, is to look at websites where you're completely not interested in things and to randomise your use, yeah, of the internet, yeah, so that it gets a bit confused and doesn't keep sending you the stuff that is clearly going to hook into what you're interested in.
Yeah.
So I think I've been aware that happens. You have to make a decision about, OK, am I just going to allow that to happen but not get hooked into what's being pushed at me? Mm. Just recognise it is being pushed at me,
yeah.
Or do I take the extra step of randomising my internet behaviour, which, to be honest, I haven't had the energy to do.
Yeah.
But it sounds like a good idea.
It does, yeah, it really does. What was I going to ask? I had a good question in mind.
I'd like to ask, so, you know, in your day-to-day,
yeah,
obviously you're part of the Diocese of Leicester, and
yeah,
it's a very, very important job. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you do a lot of other community work as well, like ourselves, myself and Zamzam, yeah, we're very much involved in our community work. So what kind of things do you think you see that, if the right data is collected, how that can enhance our community work that we all do in our different frameworks? Any thoughts on that? I know it's a loaded question, but if we had the right data to put in infrastructure, what do you think you would like to see in the community that you serve? Any thoughts?
That's a really difficult question. I don't think I've kind of made the connection between digital data and service provision. Mm-hmm. But I guess there, you know, how many people, so an obvious example would be how many people are looking for places to get cheap food or places to where they can perhaps get some assistance or fuel grants, and then being able to, it's a bit like targeted marketing, isn't it, is being able, then you are able to share on those Facebook pages, you know, information that would be helpful for people, rather than trying to sell them something. Mm-hmm. So people have a vested interest in paying for Facebook ads, don't they?
Yeah.
Localized ads. But I guess the third sector doesn't invest in targeting, here are resources that could help you. There's a question. Is
brilliant.
Is that part of your charity's marketing budget to actually think about how you're not trying to sell anything, but you are trying to say this is available to you?
That we know what the demands are being in the community, but it's creating infrastructure,
yeah,
to make our job easier.
Yeah,
and accessible for everyone, right? It's, yeah, about accessibility, whether it's health, whether it's finances, whether it's knowing where to go when you've got emergency things and you need somebody to, yeah, support you. So it's creating that hub, I guess.
Yeah. And that's the most difficult thing to do, isn't it? Because we know there's so much help and support out there. There's so many things that's happening, but the community is not accessing that.
Yeah.
So having that,
I think that's true. And I think one of the things that Citizens Advice, who I was involved with quite a number of years ago, you know, there is information that can help you, but how do people actually access it?
Yes.
I'm sure there is more that can be done. Mm-hmm. I'm also convinced that the most effective way to get people to participate in something that they're not used to doing is word of mouth.
Yes.
That's how movements really work.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, somebody who does it, who says, I got this here,
yeah,
you do it. And I think there's a lot goes on in communities of, mm-hmm, people saying, well, where did you get that from? And they,
yeah,
said, well, I went down there and they,
yeah,
were giving,
yeah,
this out.
Yeah.
And that's actually, there's credibility because you trust the person you know and what they've done.
Yeah.
So all the time there's the high level media stuff that's reading our behaviour and maybe to some extent feeding our behaviour and encouraging it. But what really changes our habits quicker is my friends doing it, so I'm going to give it a go.
Brilliant.
It's the stories, isn't it? Like you say, it's the word of mouth. It's communities actual coming together. I think we can also, doing the work that we do in our community, is after COVID, the last kind of 2 years, communities are seeking that community.
And I think even as we mourn, you know, the death of Her Late Majesty, what people really value is the chance to tell stories with other people. That's what we do when we're upset.
But even not even just when we're upset, but even when we've got something to share, I think you bring a great point.
We don't, you might stick it on Facebook, but actually what you really want is to tell your friend and hear them go, "Wow, that's great!"
And share the joy or the sadness with you.
And hopefully as community reports will be there to catch you as well.
Well, that's the plan, isn't it?
Thank you so much for your time.
All right,
thank
you so much. That's brilliant. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Hi. We are working with Leicester Smart City Project. My name is Bindu and she's Medina. Please, could you explain us more details about this?
Of course, yeah. Sure. So this project is called The Compass and it's an exploration of science researchers' journeys through their research, if you like, using the metaphor of a compass, because obviously we use compasses to navigate our spaces often. You know, like, where do we go with this or where do we go with that? And so we interviewed 20 different researchers in different subjects across the science spectrum, from biology right through to physics.
How long it takes to bring this project here?
So it's been going off about 4 months, on and off. There's been a lot of work in trying to get the interviews done and then create the animation itself and soundtracks. And it's two different pieces. There's one piece inside, which you go in and experience in a very intimate way. And then outside is very big, bold, you know, broad brush strokes and big, bold soundtrack that gets people excited about different aspects of science.
It's amazing, really, really. Everyone should have to come and visit once. It's a really interesting project here. And what is your main aim and the, what you're thinking to bring this project here in the list?
So the main aim, really, is to get people excited and interested in what science is. And it's not a stuffy subject that people in lab coats go away and just, you know, ferret away on some little project or something. It's very much shared similar aims and objectives to what we all have in life, which is to be excited and go exploring, basically, which is what all humans want to do.
Yes, you're right. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're doing research on smart cities. It's just audio, but we're just doing research on smart cities. And do you know anything about smart cities? Okay. So is there anything that you use whilst working that needs like technology or like?
Well, yeah.
Use apps and stuff.
We use we've got a computer system, and we have a handheld device as well.
Without that, do you think your job would be harder?
Yes, probably. Yeah. Although we used to do it with it. Well, no, we've always had computers.
We've always had computers.
Yeah. So yeah, it would be harder. Yeah.
Do you think there's a downside to it? Like, does it ever crash? Complications. Yeah. Sometimes you just wish that everything was just manual.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things we've got at the moment is very new to us, and we've had a lot of problems on it with it. So people don't like it very much. But yeah,
things are accessible, like a lot of people find it. Is it hard to
it would be easy to navigate. It's just that it has glitches and things that happen that we don't seem to
explain.
Unexplainable glitches. But it's still quite early days, so
it takes time to learn, and then once you have handy, then it's easy. So that is
also
a smart technology.
It depends what age you are.
I
mean, I'm old school, so I would prefer pen and paper. But somebody who's younger just comes into it and has no problems with it at all. A lot depends on what age you are as well.
But it's getting that increasingly, isn't it? I mean, the kids nowadays know so, even from like 8-9 years old, know so much.
So much about it.
Okay, so Jack,
you obviously
work at Bee Recruitment.
Awesome. Okay, so in your day-to-day, what would you say, what helps you do your job in terms of IT and AI?
We don't really use AI, but we are a recruitment company. So we use, obviously, systems, CV searching functions, obviously the telephone. We post job adverts, but we've not really got into AI yet. It has been mentioned before, but AI in recruitment would be more to sort of automatically talk to people in terms of using an AI to discuss jobs and to discuss roles and see if people are suitable. But it's not been implemented yet. So
So you know, in terms of the current data and how you obviously market jobs and stuff, so you obviously have a portfolio of CVs on in your database, so that's, to me, that's data. Right, so you obviously then scope out people who fit into a certain job spec to then write to them or contact them, right? So that's all around digital literacy, isn't it? So what we're saying is, when we have data, whether it's the higher, you know, the big corporate companies, or is it your everyday who, you know, doing a job, a role like yourself, how important is it for you to have that data secure, A, for you doing the job that you're doing, but also for the people that you're trying to recruit? So that's my question to you.
Yeah, it's absolutely crucial. Obviously, people's data need to be secure, especially within recruitment, due to various laws, and obviously it's people's personal business, so we have to keep it secure legally. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing in particular that we use from an AI perspective. It depends really what you're asking. I mean, in terms of AI, there's nothing we use in particular. It's all sort of done manually at the moment.
Okay, so what about in terms of systems? What kind of systems do you use, like in terms of a database to hold all that information?
So a lot of it's done on the website. So CV Library obviously have their own security features to keep everyone's data safe. And we also keep our data safe using passwords and obviously using files that can only be accessed by people from the company. So that's how it's secure with us. But most people, or most systems we use, have their own processes in place to keep
Okay, so then that brings me on to the next part. If we didn't have data collection, you wouldn't be able to do your job, would you? You wouldn't be able to recruit, you wouldn't know who to recruit, the business wouldn't survive, you wouldn't be able to be in a job because of that data security.
Absolutely.
Is what I'm getting to, because it's important to know what happens to our data, but also when we're in our workplaces, whatever we're doing, that safety and that literacy of that data is kept safe.
Absolutely, yeah. Especially within recruitment. Recruitment's a prime example. We're dealing with people's personal details, including bank details and you know, work history, addresses. So there's a lot of secure data, or there's a lot of data that needs to be absolutely secure because it's sensitive. So
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. I'm going to ask one last question. So, you know, in your day-to-day job, what do you think that could be easier in terms of IT and spec? Anything in your experience in the, you know, your recruitment job that you're doing right now? What would you like to see that could be a bit more robust that isn't right now? In terms of apps, websites, anything like that?
There's a long way to go in recruitment. I mean, at the moment we're quite behind in terms of the way we do things compared to other industries. So we are very much sort of, I guess, behind in terms of tech where we are, because a lot of it is done manually. A lot of it's all sort of phone work. And I mean, I suppose, like I said earlier, AI is a big one, could be a big one. So there is certain companies, especially within tech recruitment companies, that will have automated chat systems to talk to candidates and decide, I guess, if they're going to be suitable for certain jobs. But it's quite rare that you get it on your high street type agencies. A lot of it is done manually.
That's why they need the people to be able to have that people connection.
Exactly, yeah. So a lot of it is done manually. However, it would save us a lot of time and potentially money if a lot of it could be done automated, or a lot of it was done, you know, it would save us time if someone else could talk to candidates and decide if they're going to be suitable for a job. That's probably 80% of this particular role is just talking to people to decide if they're going to be suitable. But I'm sure sometime in the future that could be automated, and then we could sort of do the other bits and bobs, maybe discussing with clients and stuff like that.
Okay, my last question then. So in terms of the day-to-day that you do, you said obviously it's 80% is a lot manual and speaking to people, but then would that not put people out of a job?
Potentially. I mean, recruitment's, there's a lot to recruitment. So I think, you know, there's a lot of back and forth that you do. So candidate side is one thing, but a lot of it is doing the back and forth with clients and making sure interviews are arranged and then negotiating rates and fees and making sure people turn up for work.
Yeah.
So you will always need people to do that.
Okay.
However, I have got an idea for, I've always thought, you know, Tinder. But like a Tinder for job seekers.
For job.
Yeah, so
I don't know why.
I mean, if I had the money, I'd do it. But basically,
you know, there's funding for that.
Oh,
local, okay. Local,
well, we've heard it here first. So if that comes out, don't steal my idea.
Yeah, but I get 50%.
Okay.
I instigated the idea.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. But I mean, well, if clients, so I've always thought if clients could say pay a monthly fee and they would put a job on, so it's like a Tinder, and then candidates would swipe. I don't know if it's left or right. I've got a partner, but.
I can't say, to be honest.
So candidates would swipe if the job's suitable to them. That would connect them to the clients, and the clients would talk to the candidates on the chat function, and then they would decide if they want to go ahead. And that if that was done correctly, that could be a massive sort of thing for recruitment.
I'm surprised LinkedIn haven't done it, to be honest, because it could be a professional LinkedIn, but on an app.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I mean, LinkedIn could definitely implement it. Yeah. But, no one's really done it as far as I'm aware. So, you know, if I see it come out in the next couple of years, I'll be looking for it.
I'll be on
the
island in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
But, that's great. Yeah. Thank you so much.
No problem. That's all right.
So it's a tunnel. There's writing on the walls, different researchers, what they've done, and interesting. Dr. Susanna studied biological and medical sciences at Oxford University. So, excluding different professors and doctors, did psychology and genetics.